Yes, Deep Waters and by Portishead. And that brings us to our main part of our show tonight, the workshop that occurred yesterday at the Santa Rosa Plain Groundwater Workshop. Are you there, Jane?
Yes, I am.
Well, Jane was there, and as you heard, she was also a member. It's quite a long, the Santa Rosa Plain Watershed Groundwater Management Stakeholder Panel. And so maybe can you give us just a brief outline of how you got involved and with this report?
Yeah, I've been working on groundwater issues ever since I came to Sonoma County. When I came in the late 90s, there was quite a lot of ferment about groundwater, especially in the southern part of the Santa Rosa Plain, because people were losing their wells, and we soon, you know, they were drying up. And the same thing was happening in about 2000-2001 in the south side of Sebastopol, and people were having to drill very deep wells, people who'd had pretty shallow wells that were, you know, supplying them with water quite well, suddenly found they had to drill 300 feet down to get water. So I began looking into this as a geologist and a person who was concerned about water in the rural area where I live. About the same time, the water agency began working on an agreement with the U.S. Geological Survey to look at groundwater all over, in all of the populated parts of the county. And I was one of the people who helped start the Sonoma County Water Coalition, a coalition of groups concerned about water and environment and in a very broad way. And we were invited to just observe when they started doing a groundwater management plan for the Sonoma Valley. It's a smaller area, and USGS didn't take quite so long to do a study and report over there. And we were pretty impressed with what we saw, the coming together of all different kinds of people in the community, everybody from just plain well owners to wine growers and dairy people and just rural residents of all kinds, the business community, the commercial community. And a lot of people were very skeptical at first about it, and they said, you know, we don't want to create another government entity that makes rules. But the whole process is one that is non-regulatory, and took about a year to create their groundwater management plan, but people really came together behind it. We saw people's attitudes really change just from dealing with each other, having once-a-month meetings facilitated by a very good organization. And so that's the same thing that's now happening in the Santa Rosa Plain, and this USGS report is the underpinning of that, creating the groundwater management plan for the Santa Rosa Plain.
Good job, good work to shepherd it to this point. That took how many years?
Well, the study, was expected, I think, in 2006. So it took quite a bit longer than we anticipated, but it's a good report. If they had to do more work to make it good, then that's worth it.
Well, that's it. I mean, it's not information that's obvious. It all has to be worked for, hasn't it, to achieve it?
Yeah, I misspoke. It was 2010 that we were expecting it, so it's only three years longer than it was supposed to be, 7 years instead of 4.5 or something. But very good people worked on it, and I know they'd been working on it since about 1999 because I've been getting little bits of information coming from the people I used to work for, of, you know, factual material, knowing what they were doing right along.
Oh, excellent. That's nice to hear there's some good collaboration sometimes between governmental bodies and the public.
Yes.
It's encouraging.
That's really helped.
Indeed. Well, let me start out with the welcoming and acknowledgements at the meeting last night and the introductory context. So we'll be starting out with Rich Wilson. He's the facilitator of the Center for Collaborative Studies, with a short welcome, and then we'll go into the introductory context, the big picture, with Jay Jaspersy from the Sonoma County Water Agency.
He is the chief engineer of the Sonoma County Water Agency.
Oh, okay. Excellent. So we'll start with this first segment.
Well, good evening, everyone. I think we're going to go ahead and get started with tonight's public meeting. First of all, thank you, everyone, for coming out tonight to this important meeting. It's always great to see so many faces. My name is Rich Wilson. I am with the Center for Collaborative Policy out of Sacramento State University here with you tonight. It's exciting because we have Drs. Eric Reichert and Tracy Nishikawa from the U.S. Geological Survey with us here tonight to talk about the USGS characterization report of the Santa Rosa Plain watershed, something that many of you have been interested in for quite a long time. So it's exciting that they're here with us tonight. This is really the heart of tonight's meeting, is the presentation that they're going to give. We will have a question and answer period after the presentation. Sort of connected to this effort, or what this effort informs, is the work of the Basin Advisory Panel and the Technical Advisory Committee that has been working on groundwater management planning issues here in the Santa Rosa Plain. Just by a show of hands, if you're on the Basin Advisory Panel or you're on the Technical Advisory Committee, could you raise your hand or stand up so everyone can see you? So we have quite a lot of panel and TAC members here tonight. For those of you who are interested to learn more about this stakeholder-driven management planning process, I would encourage you to introduce yourself to any of these panel and TAC members tonight and talk to them about how that process has been unfolding. Many of them know me directly because I actually facilitate the Technical Advisory Committee, and my colleague Gina Bartlett facilitates the panel meeting.
So before I turn it over to the USGS, who will have the technical presentation, I wanted to talk about a couple points to give you a little background. And the first point is partnerships. And this study wouldn't have been completed or even initiated if it wasn't for partnerships. And I need to acknowledge the co-funders of this study. It's a well over $2 million study, and the USGS, the Water Agency, and our local co-funders, and those are the cities of Santa Rosa, Roanoke Park, Cotati, City of Sebastopol, Town of Windsor, County of Sonoma, and the Cal American Water Company. And so that partnership really came together to help really put forward this study, and I really want to acknowledge that too. And we really shared in that in equal thirds in the funding, so it was a really successful partnership. As many of you know, this has been a long-awaited report. There have been some delays, I want to acknowledge, in this report. And there's a couple of main reasons for that I just want to mention. First of all, the USGS is very thorough. They do the best work. They have a lot of quality control procedures, and so the work that you get really goes through with a fine-tooth comb, and that takes some time. The other reason, though, is that, and that people may not be aware, is that the product we're getting is much enhanced compared to what we originally scoped out and paid for the USGS. And they came to us with a new model that would do much more than what we were originally going to get, a model that combines surface water and climate change to groundwater, a very innovative new model, and this is really one of the first major rollouts of it. And with any new technology, especially on a sophisticated tool like this, things, you know, take time, and you have to go through some bugs to work out. And so, you know, that took extra time, but to the USGS's credit, they continued, and they are delivering on that promise. And so I just want to, you know, really acknowledge that, too. So that's much appreciated. The other point I want to make is, to give you a little context of where this study fits into the big picture, at least from our perspective at the Water Agency. And this is an example of, this study is an example of a long-term USGS Water Agency partnerships, not only in groundwater, but in surface water, water quality work, climate change, and we are also involved in several research programs with the USGS, and so they're a long-standing federal partner with us here in our region, and we rely on them a lot. This particular program with groundwater was really born out in the late 1990s when Dr. Eric Reichert and I sat down and developed kind of a roadmap for how can we improve our understanding of groundwater in Sonoma County. There are two major sources of water we have in our region, the Russian River supplies and system and groundwater. And we really didn't know much about groundwater. The information was dated and lacking. And so we sat down and we developed this roadmap over that envisioned over several years that we would really sequentially go through the four largest groundwater basins that are also the most heavily populated and heavily used basins in Sonoma County. Those basins are the Alexander Valley, the Sonoma Valley, Petaluma, and here in the Santa Rosa Plain. I'm happy to say that this study is the third of the four to be completed, and we're hoping soon that we can proceed in the near future, hopefully in Petaluma too, to complete that picture. Why is the water agency motivated in doing that? Well, one of the things that we really are interested in is we understand that surface water and groundwater are connected. And a lot of that connection actually happens with our operations and our transmission system that delivers water from the Russian River into at least three of these basins. There's a connection there, there's a balance, there's a linkage. And we have a choice of either proactively managing that to improve the sustainability and long-term reliability of water resources, or we can put our heads in the sand and react to it, and whatever happens, happens. And so this study is an important part of an overall program to ultimately where we can understand with what's going on with groundwater and the Russian River system, and we can manage those strategically to improve our overall resiliency of our water resources in light of the many issues that we face, whether it's fisheries issues, whether it's climate change, etc. Hopefully that gives you a little information, a little background. I'm happy to talk to you afterwards about, you know, how we see this. This is an important study in that process. It's an ongoing process. It's a long-term process. So again, I just wanted to acknowledge the USGS as a key partner in our region and express our appreciation for their involvement. It's very competitive for regions to get resources and the talent of the USGS, and so you have to compete nationwide on this stuff. And so, again, I want to express our appreciation on that. And Dr. Reichert here is the director of the USGS California Water Science Service Center, and he's been long involved in Sonoma issues, and I'll turn it over to Eric.
That was from Jay Jespersy from the Sonoma County Water Agency. Now we should give out, obviously this presentation does have some slides which we can't show on the radio, but you can look up the report and go through the report as we are on the radio. I have that address here, which I will give out. pubs.usgs.gov/sir/2013/5118. And that will get you the report, and you can go through it if you want to actually see the various plans and sections that are being described. So that's pubs.usgs.gov/sir/2013/5118. From that first introduction, perhaps, Jane, could you explain what a groundwater basin is, and actually more specifically, where are they in our area?
Well, a groundwater basin is usually a lowland. It's an area where groundwater collects. Usually the water is shed from hills surrounding the lowland, and so that's an important part of the whole picture. The water usually, it could be seeping into the ground from streams flowing through. That is a very common source of the groundwater. It turns out, as you will hear, that in the Santa Rosa Plain groundwater basin, the water mostly comes from rainfall. There is very little water coming from any other source, from streams or from water flowing in from the side, as it were. Hmm. For those who aren't able to get up the USGS report, or it's downloading very slowly, the Santa Rosa Plain watershed, the whole watershed of the area is what we're dealing with. It's a square area. It includes the hills on either side of the lowland basin, the Santa Rosa Plain. And the Santa Rosa Plain is it's kind of shaped like a knife blade pointing to the north, situated between the hills where Sebastopol sits and the hills on the opposite side of the plain, which are behind Rohnert Park and which you cross into when you get to Farmer's Lane going east on Highway 12. Hmm.
How is that broken up, those five areas, was that?
Just for the purpose of looking at, there are three zones that are drained by the major streams. There's the Mark West Creek part of the basin in the north. There's the part of the basin that's drained by Santa Rosa Creek in the middle, and that includes the Matanzas Creek and Rogers Creek and quite a number of other creeks that come together to make Santa Rosa Creek. Where the Prince Greenway is, that's along Santa Rosa Creek. Hmm. And then in the south, there's the drainages coming out of Rohnert Park, Cotati, which go into the Laguna de Santa Rosa. I think I'd like to say that the lowland, which everybody knows we drive across it all the time, between Sebastopol and Santa Rosa, that's the mm-hmm. Santa Rosa Plain. That's the basin part of the basin.
Okay.
And I think people really think it's flat, but actually it slopes very gently from the base of the hills over on the east, on the east side, over to the lowest point, which is the Laguna de Santa Rosa, right at the door of Sebastopol.
That gradual silt dispersal over the years from the hills, isn't it?
That's right. That's mostly made by the erosion of the eastern hills, which are the highest part is called the Mayacama Mountains, and there's Taylor Mountain and a number of other mountains. Now, for the purpose of looking at the groundwater quality, they divided the area into five different parts. The USGS did for this study. They have the upland area, which is the Mayacamas Mountains over there to the east. There's a valley area, which they separated from the Santa Rosa Plain, and that includes Rincon Valley and the sort of western part of Kenwood Valley. Then they sort of added Bennett Valley to the main Santa Rosa Plain. And the Santa Rosa Plain itself is divided into two areas. One that's called the Windsor Basin. Windsor is included in the Santa Rosa Plain Basin to the north. And an area they call the Cotati Basin to the south. Let's see, that's four. What's the fifth one, I guess, is the Wilson Grove Highlands to the west. And Wilson Grove is the name of the rock that forms the highlands that Sebastopol sits on and just kind of continues kind of in a north-south way all along the western edge of the Santa Rosa Plain.
Well, good. I think we've got a good idea of now how this is all broken up and how they're looking at it. Let's go into the introduction with Eric Reichard of USGS about partnerships and a bit of the USGS history in Sonoma County. And then we'll go into the actual presentation intro.
I'm going to speak very briefly and then turn it over to Tracy, who was the project lead and will be providing you with all the content. And you can direct all your questions to Tracy as well. I'm Eric Reichard. I'm the Center Director for the USGS California Water Science Center. And I just like to amplify the theme that Jay presented in terms of partnership. Partnerships are something we value very greatly at the USGS, and in particular, I just want to give you a little more information on the way in which we do that. The USGS has a program called the Cooperative Water Program, and that's what allows us to partner with
public agency, be they water agencies like Sonoma County Water Agency, cities, water districts, but the overall goal is to combine addressing pressing issues facing an area or a state with federal engagement to advance the science and address problems that have broader reaching impact. And we've really found that here in Sonoma County. There's exciting science issues. The challenges that you all face are relevant nationwide, and it's been a great opportunity to work with Sonoma County, like Jay said, going back quite a ways on our groundwater studies. But I'll just take a brief tangent. Our focus today is on groundwater, but the USGS has had a great interest in Sonoma County going back over 100 years, and that focus initially started with our stream gauging program. We operated our first stream gauge in Sonoma County in 1911 on the Russian River. Two gauges were installed on the Russian River in 1911. We currently have 32 stream gauges in the county, and 27 of them involve funding from the Sonoma County Water Agency. And I bring that up for two reasons. One, to illustrate the long-term interest in hydrology, the long-term and expanding partnership with the Water Agency, but also to emphasize the importance of data collection. The work that Tracy will present utilizes a wealth of data that's been collected by many entities over various periods of time. And to understand the fundamental issues that are key to understanding water management, you have to collect good data, you have to collect long-term data. And what you see in the report and what you'll see presented today reflects the mining of that wealth of data. And I think it's worth keeping in mind as we all look to the future of what's important to preserve and steward the resource. With that, I'll turn it over to Tracy. I just want to emphasize that the USGS values the opportunity to partner with the Water Agency. That's a key part of our mission, to help understand and manage, provide the basic science to manage water resources. And we also appreciate the opportunity to present some of the results of our study. And with that, I'll turn it over to Tracy, who will dig into the content.
Thanks for coming out, everybody. It's very gratifying to see everyone come out. For the outline of our presentation, I'm going to give a brief overview of the USGS, USGS 101, and then I'll give a brief overview of groundwater, groundwater 101. Now, some of you have picked up the handouts that Sonoma County Water Agency provided. One is a groundwater primer or primer, so you can use that for additional information. And then finally, I'll give an overview of the results of the Santa Rosa Plain watershed hydrology and geochemistry. So for a brief biography of myself, I'm a research hydrologist with the USGS, been with the survey for more than 20 years. I have my PhD in 1988 from UCLA in civil engineering. My expertise is in groundwater modeling and water resources management. Someone was asking me about doing field work. I'm the designated finger loser when it comes to going out in the field. So I'm a computer jockey. So many of you, the USGS is more than a pretty face and heroic. I just want to make that clear. Although we are a pretty face and heroic, we're also a science organization. USGS stands for United States Geological Survey. We are a federal agency within the Department of Interior, and this shows some of our other sister agencies within the DOI. It was established in 1879 by President Hayes, and basically it's responsibility was to map the minerals of the Western United States. We're an independent scientific organization. We are non-regulatory. That is, we don't make up any rules. We don't make any rules, like the EPA or some other federal agencies, right? We don't have any land management responsibilities or natural resource responsibilities. And we work in partnership, as Eric pointed out, with water agencies, other federal agencies, academics, tribal organizations, and other NGOs. We were recently reorganized into multidisciplinary mission areas. The most important one is highlighted in yellow, water, which Eric and I are with. And part of that water program is this California Water Science Center. We have expertise in groundwater, surface water, hydrologic modeling, including the stream gauging that Eric talked about, and water quality.
A question on, actually, just before that, when they talk about modeling, what does that really mean? Is that some computer model, a cardboard model on the table? What are we talking about?
Well, it's both working out an idea of how, you know, taking all the data and putting it together to, along with diagrams and maps, to determine how the system functions. And then it is, a lot of this information is worked into a mathematical, a series of mathematical formulas to come out actually with numbers. You know, you have to, you haven't played the part where he talks about how the weather plays into our water supply, but climate is involved, variations in climate, temperature, the number of trees, because trees and other plants take water from the ground and use it for respiration and then evaporate the water through their leaves. So evapotranspiration is important, and the density of vegetation plays into that. Just all the various things that I've just mentioned and that he's going to talk about in his talk that can be quantified are put into hydrologic models. And then they crunch the numbers, and that's what Dr. Nishikawa is an expert in, and come out with not just how it's functioning now, how, you know, what the numbers looked like, say, in 2012, but what they might look like in the future if we have a whole string of low rain years or a whole string of flood years. Mm-hmm. You know, what are the different parameters, and how can we look at what's likely to happen in the future? And that part of the study, the number crunching part, is still being reviewed by the U.S. Geological Survey. So what we have in the talk that he gave last night is the background information and the what they call the conceptual model, which is a diagram showing all the stuff that's been developed, what the geology is, what the structure is, how the rocks are related to each other, where the water is aggregated, where it flows, and what that means for our water supply.
Okay. You worked 25 years for USGS. So what were your responsibilities there?
Well, I was one of the people who did not lose fingers in the field. I was one of the people who went out and examined areas to which I was assigned, and sometimes areas to which I proposed that I should go out, and they agreed to it, and to make maps and determine, you know, what the rock types are and what the structures are, and that feeds into things like, you know, water supply determinations. And in the case in which I worked, mostly it had to do with evaluating areas for their wilderness qualities, and I was sent out to see whether there were mineral deposits or other resources that would keep areas from being designated for protection. One of the results of the work that we did was designation of a large part of the Mojave Desert as a preserve.
Oh, was that the Dianne Feinstein bill?
Yes, the California Desert Bill.
Oh, great. That's nice to be part of that.
The Mojave National Preserve is now the name of where I worked. Hmm.
Tracy Nishikawa is going to talk about what is groundwater, which I think we all need a little help with that.
All right, so groundwater 101. So this is a picture showing the hydrologic cycle. Obviously, we know the hydrologic cycle over here. Water evaporates from the oceans, condenses into clouds, floats over mainland, rains, snows, runs off, soaks into the ground, recharges the groundwater, runs off, returns to the ocean. So basically, we all drink recycled water been drinking recycled water for a long time. All right, so the basic idea of this figure is, let's kind of zoom in and look at some of the what's going on in terms of groundwater. So you have precipitation. It falls on the ground. Some infiltrates into the soil surface. Some runs off. It goes into what's called the unsaturated zone. And some of that water will go into the saturated zone. Now, one of the main ideas here is that water flows downhill. And it will flow downhill. Some of it's taken up by trees and plants, and some will go into, say, a stream in this case. I want to also point out that groundwater moves very slowly, in an order of maybe feet per day, maybe less. It's not like if you put a drop of water here, it instantly gets down here to the stream. So this is a concept of gaining and losing streams. So if your water table is above the stream bed elevation, groundwater will go into the stream. It's a gain stream, it supplies base flow. If the groundwater table is below the stream bed elevation, then the streams will lose water and go into the groundwater system. So some basic groundwater terminology. Definition of aquifer, it's a little bit different than what's in that handout, but it's basically the same idea. It's a body of sediment that yields significant or economic amounts of groundwater to wells or springs. The groundwater basin is an aquifer that is bounded laterally and at depth. So basically you can think of a conceptual groundwater basin as like a bathtub filled with dirt, and you got water inside the dirt. And you can't have water flowing out of the bathtub, right? So that would be a very simplistic groundwater basin. The last concept is the concept of hydraulic connectivity or permeability. And that's basically a measure of how the rock or sediment's ability to transmit water. So the higher the permeability or hydraulic connectivity, the easier water moves through the aquifer.
Interesting. I just want to back up on that, Jane, if I can. Question, permeability and rocks. Often people don't think of rocks as being permeable, as actually seeping like a sponge. Could you explain how that works?
He was talking about dirt, but and the diagram did sort of look like it was water in a bathtub, I need to explain that a lot of people think of groundwater as being an underground lake, but that's actually very rare, and especially in California, that can happen in limestone-rich areas. But in general, the groundwater is actually held in little tiny pore spaces between the grains of a rock or soil, and so it is much more like a sponge.
Okay, so yeah, it's and different rocks have a different permeability. Is that the essence of that?
Right. There are two factors. There's porosity and permeability. Porosity means the spaces between the grains, little round grains. You might think of if you put a bunch of golf balls in a bag, then there are spaces between them because they're all spherical. And so those are the pore spaces, but permeability means the amount of connection between the spaces. So a very good aquifer is going to be porous and permeable.
There's a lot of variables within that.
There's a lot of variables, and there's even more.
Oh dear, keep it simple.
Yeah, because if we're talking about little spherical particles, then we're talking about something that's like sandstone, and there can be coarse-grained rocks called like gravels or conglomerates, they're called, that have larger particles. But when you get a lot of clay in a rock, and you'll hear a little more about clays later on, clays are sheet-like, and they pack very closely, and so they have, in general, very limited pore spaces and very little permeability, almost none in many layers. So he'll talk about that a little later.
Okay, well, let's go back to the study and the presentation. We'll have an overview from Tracy Nishikawa, and then we'll go into basically a description of the geological formations within the area they studied.
It does exist. Here's the report right here in my hand. just, you know. And it's also, I'll give the website here at the end to download and print it out, or you can read it in PDF format. So there's three study objectives: to develop an updated assessment of the hydrology and geochemistry of the Santa Rosa Plain watershed, develop a coupled watershed groundwater flow model, and to evaluate the hydrologic impacts of alternative groundwater management strategies on the basin. So we need the first objective to do an assessment of the hydrology and geochemistry to help us develop and build the model. So as I think Jay mentioned, or Eric mentioned, that the study is based primarily on published data, and we use some new data that we collected as part of this work. So the study scope included looking at the regional hydrogeology and surface water hydrology, looking at the groundwater hydrology in terms, including the aquifer characteristics, recharge, discharge, levels and movement. We looked at geochemistry in terms of quality, the source and age of the groundwater. This is just a list of, you can see that there's an extensive number of people that worked on this project. I want to acknowledge the folks that are in yellow who helped write the various chapters of the report. Okay, so as Eric mentioned, this is a part of the cooperative water program between the USGS and the California Water Science Center and the various stakeholders, including Sonoma County Water Agency, who was basically our main point of contact for the project, and other stakeholders that are shown here. There's four chapters: introductory chapter, a chapter describing the hydrology and hydrogeology, a chapter talking about the water quality, and lastly, a chapter describing the conceptualization of the system. This brown line here defines our study area, what we call the Santa Rosa Plain watershed. It includes the Santa Rosa Plain and Rincon Valley groundwater subbasins, parts of the Wilson Grove Highlands groundwater basin, Kenwood groundwater basin, the Healdsburg area subbasin, and the Alexander Valley subbasin. The total area of the study area is about 167,000 acres. The USGS worked in this, published a report by Cardwell in 1958 that characterized primarily the hydrogeology and did some work with geochemistry of the Santa Rosa Valley. Subsequently, the Department of Water Resources published three reports looking at the Santa Rosa Valley. And the USGS sampled 28 wells in the study area and analyzed for volatile organic compounds, pesticides, and naturally occurring inorganic constituents. And those data were used as part of this report. So you can see that the last report was published in 87. So this is the first synthesis and analysis of relevant data in about 30 years. This is a figure showing basically the surface geology, which is what geologists can see at the surface as they're walking around. There's a couple basic formations to talk about. The Sonoma volcanics here, basically up in the uplands. And these have a variable permeability. You could drill a well, you can hit a fracture, and it'll make lots of water. You can drill a well and hit solid rock and make no water. The Wilson Grove here on the west side here is of marine origin, and it has very little clay. And it's probably the most permeable material. The Petaluma here in the brown is of marine and non-marine origin. It's a mudstone with thin stringers of coarse material, and overall, it's probably the least permeable. The Glen Ellen and the Quaternary are clay-rich deposits of poorly assorted sand, silt, and gravel. Previous work has indicated that this material is about 3,000 feet thick, but recent work by the USGS has indicated that's about 150 to 200 feet thick. Faults can be barriers to groundwater flow. And so we have the Sebastopol Fault here, this unnamed fault just east of the Sebastopol, the Trenton Ridge Fault, another unnamed fault, Rogers Creek Fault Zone, Bennett Valley Fault Zone, Macama Fault Zone, and others. So what we're doing here now is looking at a cross-section on BB prime. So you can see here, this is a cartoon, but the relatively thin Glen Ellen Quaternary material. We see that Wilson Grove interfingers with the Petaluma at depth. And we have the Sonoma volcanics kind of underlying the eastern part of the basin. And the Petaluma formation is relatively thick, or very thick, I should say. Colleagues with our geologic discipline analyzed driller's logs for 2,700 wells. So a driller's log is a description of the material that the driller encounters while they're drilling the well. So it might be a sandy clay or clay sand or gravel or something like that. So they took these and built a extensive database. So we have here on this side, you can see, I don't know if you can tell, this colors here, kind of the warmer colors are the more permeable material, like a gravel or sand or something like that. Over here, the cooler colors are basically clay, low permeability material. So if you look here, you have the sands, fine-grained sands of the Wilson Grove. Then as you move east, you have kind of sands and clays of the Glen Ellen Quaternary. You have lots of clay down here at depth in the Petaluma. And then you have Sonoma volcanics as you move into the uplands. Okay, this is just a cross-section. What Don Sweetkind and Emily Taylor did was develop a three-dimensional distribution of these materials. Vicki Langenheim and her colleagues used geophysics to map the depth of bedrock in the Santa Rosa Plain. So this way is this direction is north. Okay, so we have here the Sebastopol Fault, Trenton Ridge Fault, and the Rogers Creek Fault Zone. Okay, the warmer colors is relatively shallow depth to bedrock. The cooler color is deep to bedrock. So we see here that we have two depressions. This depression, what we call the Windsor Basin, is about 3,000 to 6,500 feet deep. What we call the Cotati Basin ranges from 8,000 to 10,000 feet deep. It's separated by a bedrock high called the Trenton Ridge. Yeah, there's three main streams within the watershed. Mark West Creek, and this shows call it the sub-watershed of the system, the Mark West Creek's watershed. And Santa Rosa Creek and Laguna de Santa Rosa. There's 15 USGS stream gauges in the basin. This Mark West Creek and Mirabel is basically the outlet where Mark West Creek leaves the watershed and goes into the Russian River. All right, so this is what's called a hydrograph, streamflow hydrograph. We have water year here on the x-axis and flow on the y-axis. This one shows, the bottom one shows the records for the various stream gauges within the Santa Rosa Plain watershed. And this one shows five of those stream gauges with two from Napa River and one from Sonoma Creek. And the reason we show this is just to show that relatively these records are very short, on the order of 5 years, whereas we're talking decades for the, say, Napa River. And the problem is that we need good data to help us develop that model that I talked about earlier. A couple things to note about the stream flow in the Santa Rosa Plain watershed, that they're strongly seasonal with high winter flows and low to intermittent summer flows. It's what the surface water hydrologists call flashy, that they respond very quickly to precipitation events. All right, so as I said, Mark West Creek at Mirabel is a very important stream gauge. Kind of integrates all the runoff from the entire watershed into one point. We need to make a longer record. We use this statistical method called the MOVE.1 method to generate estimates of stream flow. And this is in red here is the estimated stream flow, and here in blue is the measured stream flow. One of the things that does do is what's kind of cool here is that we use the MOVE-1 with a Napa River gauge, and it captures some of the droughts that happened here in the watershed. The drought in the early 60s, the drought of the mid 70s, and the drought of the late 80s, early 90s.
With us is Jane Nelson, and she's helping us understand all the technicalities of this workshop and really the implications of it. Lots of numbers and dryness, but really over the long run, this affects all our lives, doesn't it, Jane?
Yes, it does. And he covered a lot of stuff very quickly there. Should I go over some of the things about the rock?
Yeah, definitely. Please elucidate on some of that info.
So he was talking about the Glen Ellen and Quaternary. That's a reference to, in geologic nomenclature, the most recent deposits. We don't give too many, usually give names to them unless there's some special reason for it. So he was talking about the Glen Ellen, which is a relatively young deposit. It's an erosive deposit, mostly erosion of the Sonoma volcanics, which he also talked about. And the Quaternary then would be the stream deposits and deposits just eroded off the hills and washed down from the mountains on alluvial fans and such. So that's the uppermost material in the Santa Rosa Plain Basin. Underneath the Glen Ellen and the Quaternary deposits in the basin, just in the lowland area, then you've got these older rocks, which he called the Wilson Grove. I had already, I think, named that. That's the hills that Sebastopol sits on and borders the Laguna de Santa Rosa pretty much all the way along. Then underneath that, the cover of Glen Ellen and Quaternary, there's the Petaluma Formation, which is interfingered with the Wilson Grove Formation. They actually, were deposited sort of back and forth so that they overlap. And then to the east are the volcanic rocks, and the Petaluma Formation and also the Wilson Grove in some areas have the volcanic rocks interleaved with them too. These rock units are all about the same age. All sort of formed at the same time. The Wilson Grove formed on the ocean side and extending inland. The Petaluma is mostly an interior basin deposit. That's where all the clays come from. Things get winnowed out. Kind of a big lake, probably, drying up occasionally. And then the volcanics were going off over to the east in the area that's now Sonoma Valley. The volcanics can come down anywhere and at any time. They're erupting. But the great thing about the volcanics is that they help us date the other rocks, figure out what the ages are of the other rocks.
Okay. Now, one thing you mentioned, there was a couple of depressions that were like 8,000 to 10,000 feet. They're like additional dips in the basin. Is that what they are?
Right. The basin, the rocks that underlie all the ones that I just mentioned are the older rocks. The Wilson Grove, Petaluma, and Sonoma volcanics are between they're as old as 6-7 million years. That's relatively recent, geologically speaking. The Glen Ellen is more like 2 million years, and the Quaternary rocks are even younger. But underneath it all is what's called the Franciscan Formation, named after San Francisco. Okay. And these are much older rocks formed from a collision of an ocean floor with continent about 150 million years ago. So they're quite a lot older than the other rocks. There are people who live on areas underlain by the Franciscan Formation, and they get their water from it, but at very low flow rates. In rocks like that, and in many of the volcanic rocks, water only flows through cracks.
Oh, I see.
And because there isn't a granular aspect to them for the water to fill pores.
Okay.
Yeah, so those are the oldest rocks, and everything's kind of buckled. There's been a lot of buckling of the rocks, and this is because of the impingement of the Pacific Plate on the other side of the San Andreas Fault against the edge of the North American continent. I don't know if everybody knows, but the San Andreas Fault is only 20 miles from Santa Rosa. You cross it when you cross into on Highway 1 into Bodega Bay,
okay.
And it's not just gliding. The Pacific side isn't just gliding north beside the North American continent, because North America is traveling west. So it's a bit of a rough kind of impingement slide. You know, they kind of grind past each other. So buckling happens, and probably all of the what we call mountains here on both sides of the Santa Rosa Plain and the Santa Rosa Plain itself are a result of buckling from the Pacific and North America and plates uneasily sliding past each other. And so some of that buckling has produced very deep basins and with faults between them. So under the Santa Rosa Plain, because of this study, the USGS discovered much deeper basins than we had thought existed under the cover of the Santa Rosa Plain.
Oh, interesting. Just, you know, a side thought. You know, I know in 2006, Santa Rosa was really devastated by the quake. Is
yes,
that because
it was just
of
as
this?
Devastated as San Francisco, although no fire.
Okay. Is that because of this? It's not on dirt, it's on dirt rather than rock. Is that part of the problem?
It's probably because of the shaking, yes, the shaking of the fill in the basin, and especially clay fill. If the flakes of clay are not really well aligned and they're full of water, then there can be pretty awful shaking like jello in an earthquake.
Well, let's go on with the report from Tracy Nishikawa of USGS. And this will be about groundwater and basically what goes in and what comes out of our area.
All right, so we're going to switch to groundwater now. The primary sources of recharge the groundwater system are infiltration and precipitation and infiltration from streams. Minor sources include groundwater from majoring groundwater subbasins or basins, the ones I kind of talked about earlier, and septic tanks, leaky pipes, irrigation return flow, frost protection. Okay, for primary sinks or groundwater discharge is base flow that is discharge, groundwater discharging to streams, we talked about earlier, and pumping. So there's primarily three pumping sinks, municipal, agricultural, and domestic. The reported total municipal pumpage ranged from 3,900 to 10,000 acre-feet a year. The agricultural pumpage was estimated using a calibrated watershed model, climate data, and crop water demand coefficients, published water demand coefficients, to range from 8,900 to about 47,000 acre-feet a year. And domestic pumping was estimated to range from 11,000 to 23,000 acre-feet a year. And those data were estimated using census data and assumed water demand of 0.19 acre-feet per year per capita, as published by the Department of Water Resources. The maximum pumping for any one year was 53,000 acres. Other source or discharge would be evapotranspiration from plants and from standing water. Minor sinks would be springs and flow out of the watershed into neighboring basins and subbasins. But these are called water level contours. And so a water level contour is a line of equal water surface elevation. So like this one right here is 80. So this is a line of equal water surface elevation of 80 feet. No, 80 feet elevation, not 80 feet to the water, right. And well, this is also, these are 1951 water levels as published by Cardwell. So in 1951, granted there were people living here, there were people pumping water for ag, but this is the earliest data that we have, so we're going to call this pre-development conditions, or close to pre-development conditions. So what you can see here is that we talked about how water flows downhill. So water flows downhill, so we see it's high over here and low over here. So basically water's flowing east to west toward the Laguna de Santa Rosa, and from the Wilson Grove Highlands wet east into the Laguna de Santa Rosa. Another thing to notice is that, see how you have these V's right here? That means that the water is entering the stream from groundwater, so it's a gaining stream that we talked about earlier. So Santa Rosa Creek is gaining water here east of the Rogers Creek Fault Zone, and it's gaining water here a little about 5 miles west of the fault zone. You see here, Marquess Creek is also gaining some water here. Now here's the water level contours from fall 1990. So we see that we have some water level depressions here around Roanoke Park and Cotati, probably due to pumping. Okay, but again, Santa Rosa Creek is still gaining water here east of the fault zone. And water in general is still flowing east to west. Okay, here's water levels from spring 2007. Okay, we see here that depression has somewhat recovered, but due to decreased pumping in the Roanoke Park area, but it's not back to the 1951 conditions. It's still 20, 40 feet below that. In addition to water level contours, we looked at hydrographs. Okay, hydrographs are time-varying water levels at a particular for a particular well. So I'm just going to show a couple here just for illustrative purposes. So this well here, both these wells are Roanoke Park production wells. 23H1 is about 1,500 feet deep. 25C1 is about 375 feet deep. Up here, well, it looks better in the report. This is the time-varying pumping, total pumping from the Roanoke Park wells. Both of these wells were perforated in the Petaluma Formation. And you can see that the water levels are responding to pumping. So where it starts leveling off, the groundwater levels start leveling off. And where pumping is decreased, then the water levels are starting to respond to increase. Now, you'll see there's less drawdown here in the 25C1 well. And that may be due to poor vertical communication because of the clays, the clay material of the Petaluma Formation. All right, so summarize, for the geohydrology, there's four primary water-bearing formations. The Glen Ellen Quaternary material, the Wilson Grove, Petaluma, which is relatively clay-rich and lower permeability, Sonoma Volcanics, as we pointed out, has variable permeability for the various material. The gravity study by Langenheim indicates that there's two deep basins, the Windsor and Cotati, as deep as 10,000 feet. And finally, there's complex faulting in the watershed that can be, and these faults can be barriers to groundwater flow. The surface water, we have 15 USGS gauges with relatively short records. The flow is highly variable with high flows in the winter, low flows in the summer. It's a rapid response to precipitation. Again, it's a flashy system. And groundwater is an important component for summer flow. Okay, again, water is contained in all four formations. I already said that. Precipitation is the primary source of recharge. The primary discharges are pumping, ET, and base flow. Basically, groundwater flows east to west with a minor component of the west-east from the Wilson Grove. Creeks are gaining water, like, for example, Sonoma Creek east of the Rogers Creek Fault Zone. And the water levels have declined in the southern part of the watershed due to pumping. And since pumping has decreased, they have recovered, but not back to 1951 conditions.
Yeah, very interesting one there, Jane. Obviously, pumping water coming out of the plain. Now, just go back a bit. They're starting from 1951 as their basis.
Right, that's their baseline.
Yeah, how many people were here in the area at that time?
Well, it was a much smaller population and mostly agrarian. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you exactly population. I didn't think to look that up, but it was a much smaller population. The big population boom really came between the mid-70s and into the 80s.
Mm. Okay.
But certainly it's that big groundwater decline that he was talking about that got me involved in water issues in Sonoma County. You know, when I really look back at the figures I have, the groundwater levels declined about 30 feet on average, but as much as 100 feet in the southern Santa Rosa Plain from all the groundwater pumping and, you know, just the fact that the levels weren't really being monitored. except by the state. The state became very alarmed because of, I guess, because of reports that people were, you know, finding that their wells were drying up.
Does it mean literally the ground was also sinking in when they say a depression? Literally, are you sucking the water out and the ground sinking? Or?
He's not talking about the ground sinking when he's talking about depression. What he's talking about is the measurements in wells that show depression of the groundwater surface.
Hmm.
And so he was talking about the elevation lines, elevation contours and the Vs and so forth. Those are measured in wells. You know, you measure about three dozen wells in an area, and up in the hills you'll find that the groundwater is higher than it is farther down the slope. And so then under the flatter part of the Santa Rosa Plain, they were finding that closer to Rohnert Park, they were not encountering the groundwater until they got into really deep levels. Mm. And so that's what he's talking about. He's talking about a great depression of the groundwater elevation, the top of the groundwater zone. And that's what I'm saying. It was 30 feet on average, but as much as 100 feet in some areas. And that decline went on from 1970 to 1990, and it actually remained at a pretty low level from 1990 to 1999, and I'm taking that from state data that were plotted up by the Water Agency. Now, in 1985, the Water Agency began increasing deliveries of Russian River water to Rohnert Park, but Rohnert Park kept increasing its pumping levels until 1999. As soon as they actually stopped pumping so much and started, you know, backing off on their pumping, then the groundwater levels started coming up. By 2005, you could see it was reversing and beginning to come up.
Mm-hmm.
And by 2007, the groundwater levels were high enough to erase that pattern of deep downwarping of the groundwater surface. And the group I helped start, the Sebastopol Water Information Group, we are monitoring wells, private wells. You know, volunteers ask us to monitor their wells, about 12 of them, to the north and the south of Sebastopol. And what we're finding from 2005 to the present is that the water levels are just coming up and up and up because they were so deeply depressed, and now that that pumping is no longer going on so heavily, they're just continuing to come back up. And part of that is conservation, too. A lot of people are really paying attention to conservation.
Oh, excellent. But that brings up something that didn't get talked about, but later on in the questions, was the casino that's opening up in Rohnert Park. It's been coming back, but they're going to be using a lot of water, aren't they? What's the impact of that, if any?
Yes, I think they probably will be pumping, but there's another factor here, and that is that the Water Agency has three wells in the Laguna de Santa Rosa, which were contributing to that depression, too.
Hmm.
I think by 2000, and I think around 2004, 2005, they were pumping 2 billion gallons per year from their wells. And since 2009, they've really stopped that level of pumping, and so that's adding to the rebound in the groundwater down in the southern Santa Rosa Plain. I don't know how much the casino intends to pump, but it seems to me that they would be hard-pressed to pump anywhere near that much.
Okay, hopefully,
but we'll see.
Really?
Let's hope.
Yeah. Really. Talk about estimates. He mentioned some various estimates. How good are they in terms of that? There was something so much per person and, you know, of water and things like that.
1.9 acre feet per year per person was
that? Yeah. Is that realistic, those numbers they've used?
You know, I think that could be inflated, at least for areas where people really think about conservation. It's certainly a large number for people, but, you know, putting in low-flow toilets, putting in low-flow shower heads, I think that's an inflated estimate these days, at least for Sonoma County.
Okay, so we really got to be careful then when we look at these numbers. Then they may not accurately reflect us then.
Yeah, they're not it's probably good to be on the high side because it kind of, you know, it gives you a worst case type of scenario. But I think the lesson here is that our basin does have limitations,
right.
And recognizing them and making sure that we're collecting the data so that we can see when signs of stress start to appear.
Right.
And the monitoring I'm talking about is not the same thing as measuring the pumping at private wells. It's
okay.
It's measuring the groundwater levels because that can warn you ahead of time about problems, the kinds of problems that developed in the Santa Rosa Plain in the 80s and 90s.
Right. And in fact, the next section really, I suppose, deals with really some of the main concerns people have is the groundwater quality, what's in the water that mm-hmm. we're pumping out of there. Have you got anything
right.
to say about that before we go into that section?
Well, he mentioned that there have been programs to sample for volatile organic compounds. I don't think he said it as clearly enough. He said it kind of fast, so people might have missed that.
I missed it. Yeah.
And for pesticides and other kinds of contaminants, there is a program called the Groundwater Ambient Monitoring Program. It's a partnership. GAMMA is what it's called. And so I'm not sure how often that sampling is going to be done, but there is a concern that we need to watch for contamination sites. And the state also has a program called Leaking Underground Storage Tanks, or LUST, and a cleanup program, which comes under the county. It's kind of a state-county organized program.
So people are watching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're watching. And the county now feels like if anything untoward is found in the groundwater, that people living near it need to be told.
Good. That's often, I know in your work, it's often hard to get the information out and to people, isn't it?
Right. That's right. But programs like this really help.
Yes, indeed. Well, let's go back to Tracy Nishikawa and his report on the Santa Rosa Plain groundwater from the USGS study, which was presented last night at the Finlay Center in Santa Rosa. We're also speaking with Jane Nielsen about the geology, any geological questions. So if you have something, 874-1073, and let's go on with Tracy Nishikawa.
All right, so water quality. So water quality data were compiled and collected for this report and were used to characterize the aerial, vertical, and temporal variations in groundwater quality and to identify potential constituents of concern. So we looked at physical properties, inorganic constituents that were collected between 47 and 2010. We collected data from 15 surface water sites and two springs up here in the mountains, collected or compiled, I should say. And we collected or compiled data from 162 groundwater sites. Just for purposes of discussion, in the report, we broke the watershed into five sub-areas. The sub-areas are the Wilson Grove, basically west of the Sebastopol Fault, the Katahdin, which is south of the Trenton Ridge Fault and between the Sebastopol and Rogers Creek Fault zones, Windsor, which is north of the Trenton Ridge. Well, it's this wedge here. I'm not going to go through it. Upland, up here in the mountains, except for the valley areas, and the valleys include the Rincon, Bennett, and part of the Kenwood. So historic data collection, basically we compiled data from Department of Water Resources and USGS. For surface water and for groundwater, we compiled data from Department of Water Resources, Department of Public Health, and the USGS. Data collected as part of this study, we collected some of the data, and then we also collected in partnership with some consultants that were sampling or developing wells for, I believe, the city of Sebastopol and the city of Santa Rosa. For water quality data, we looked at major ions. Major ions include cations, that is, positively charged ions, including sodium, calcium, magnesium. Anions, negatively charged, chloride, bicarbonate, and sulfate. We also collected data on constituents of potential concern, stable isotopes of water, O18 and deuterium. And we collected age dating data, tritium and carbon-14. So what we're going to do now is look at a look at the major ions along this BB prime slice. So these are what's called stiff diagrams, and they show the concentrations of the ions, and they indicate the relative proportions of the major ions. So up here, here's what they look like. You have sodium, calcium, magnesium. Yeah, on the left side, those are the cations again. On the right side, you have the anions, chloride, bicarbonate, and sulfate. All right, so basically, I'm not a geochemist, but you look at this one right here in well W102, that is sodium chloride. The way it's sticking out there, okay, it's relatively high concentration of sodium chloride. So let's look at W102 a little bit more. W102 is in the Rogers Creek Fault Zone. And the deep sample, what we call W102B, is a sodium chloride water, right? Got the sodium sticking out here, and you got the chloride sticking out there. And it's got a high dissolved solids. You can't read it. It's 1,800 milligrams per liter. So this is indicative of deeply circulating water coming up along the fault. And this is also observed by other researchers, for example, Cardwell back in the 50s. So the shallow sample, what we call W102A, it's upwelling along the Rogers Creek Fault Zone. And so then 102A, the shallower one, is a sodium. See, it's still sodium. It's sticking out over here, but it's a bicarbonate here. And it has a relatively high TDS. And it's indicative of mixing of this deep water with fresher, shallower water. Now let's look at this well 103 here, W103. Okay, it's a different type of water. It looks like it's a mixed cation bicarbonate water, and it's got a lower dissolved solids concentration. So that indicates there's minimal flow across the Rogers Creek Fault Zone, east to west, east to west flow across the Rogers Creek Fault Zone. So let's look at flow across the Sebastopol Fault. So here we have these wells here that are perforated in red. These wells are perforated only in the Wilson Grove Formation. And basically they have the similar shaped stiff diagrams and a relatively low dissolved solids in the order of 300 milligrams per liter. Up here, these two wells here, who are perforated in the Glen Ellen and Petaluma Formation, are sodium bicarbonate type water. So it's a different type of water. Okay, you see the shapes are different. And the dissolved solids concentrations, I think, are on the order of 400 milligrams per liter, much higher, or relatively higher. So that this indicates is there's limited flow across the Sebastopol Fault from the Wilson Grove into the Cotati Subbasin. Also, what this indicates is there's restricted vertical flow from the Wilson Grove upward into the overlying Petaluma and Glen Ellen Quaternary material. All right, constituents of potential concern. Okay, these are some of the constituents we sampled for. These numbers here are the maximum contaminant level set by the EPA, the secondary maximum contaminant level, or the health-based notification level. So this is the percentage of samples that we found that were greater than those levels. So you can see, for example, chloride only 2% were greater than the 250 milligram per liter. Obviously, you have. I think it's well known there's iron and manganese problems in the watershed, and so 43% and 73% respectively were greater than the contaminant levels. However, I forgot to mention that these data were from samples of raw water. That is, these weren't samples from the tap. Okay, these were samples of raw water prior to treatment. So, if we want to look at the source and age of water, we looked at oxygen 18 and deuterium, and we looked at tritium and carbon 14. So let's see here. So the more negative numbers, like for example minus 42, indicate that the water was recharged under cooler conditions or under a higher elevation. So like if you look at the negative 42 versus say the minus 37s over here, that you can see that this water was probably recharged from precipitation falling on the Myakness Mountains. whereas, and these, notice how these are relatively uniform numbers, so they're probably indicative of the good mixing going on here in the in this area. Over here in the Wilson Grove, you see that they're also relatively uniform, like minus 37, but they're less negative than these values over here. So if these are less negative, that means that this water was either was probably evaporated. So because the Mendocino Range is lower elevation than Mayaquez. And then if you look here in the middle here, it's kind of a mixture of numbers here. It's not that uniform. So you have a mixture of water coming across here from the east. And you also have what's happening is you have some precipitation falling directly on the plain. That's a lower elevation. That precipitation was partially evaporated. Therefore, you have a less negative number. For age dating, we collected tritium and carbon-14 samples. Tritium is a natural and anthropogenic tracer. It's got a little over a 12-year half-life. There was a spike in tritium from the atmospheric testing of nuclear weapons in the 50s and 60s. So if your water has tritium in it, it was probably recharged within the last 50 years. Carbon-14, okay, we all know carbon-14, age dates, mummies and stuff. And so it's got a 5,700-year half-life, and again, it's a tracer of older water. For our work, we defined modern water to have more than 0.3 tritium units. At the time, that was the detection limit. So, okay, what are we looking at here? So over here, again, in the circles, we see here in W102 that we have less than 0.1 tritium units, and the carbon-14 data indicates that the water's in the deep system is 27,000 years old, and the shallower is 10,000 years old. Now, what's interesting here is that these two wells over here on the west side, 33 and 34, they have very old water too. I mean, 33 has a 14,000-year-old water, and 34 has 34,000-year-old water. So that means that indicates that the water is probably flowing deep and long on a very long flow path from the east to the west. All right, so the major ion data indicates there's limited vertical mixing between the shallow and deep systems, and that the Rogers Creek and fault zone and Sebastopol fault restrict groundwater flow. Okay, I think that doesn't stop it, it just restricts it. So the stable isotopes indicate that recharge is occurring from precipitation in the uplands, from rainfall falling on the Mayaquez Mountains. The isotopes are heavier, indicating that there's been evaporation of precipitation falling on the Santa Rosa Plain. But there is recharge of precipitation in the Santa Rosa Plain. The age dating shows that there's modern recharge in the shallow wells. I didn't touch on it, but it shows that. The vertical flow, again, is restricted by clays in the Glen Ellen and Petaluma Formation. And the carbon-14 data indicate there's very old water at depth between 1,000 to 34,000 years old. All right, so what we do is then try to bring all those disparate data into a cohesive idea of how the groundwater system, hydrology of the system works. So as I said, I don't know, umpteen times, precipitation is the major source of recharge. Most of it is probably occurring here in the mountains, but some is occurring in the plain. Marquess Creek, Santa Rosa Creek, and Laguna de Santa Rosa and their tributaries drain the watershed. The Santa Rosa Creek and other creeks gain groundwater. Santa Rosa Creek primarily east of the Rogers Creek fault zone. There are four main water-bearing formations. The Wilson Grove, it interfingers here at depth with the Petaluma, the thick Petaluma. It's overlain by the Glen Ellen Quaternary material, which is relatively thin, 150, 200 feet thick. And as you go east, there's the Sonoma Volcanics, which also interfinger with the Petaluma at depth. Groundwater flows primarily east to west. Okay, as I showed, based on the age dating, there's some very long flow paths on the order of thousands, tens of thousands of years. But there is modern water at in the shallower systems. Okay, this is, again, the first comprehensive synthesis of data or characterization of the Santa Rosa Plain watershed in maybe 30 years. But there are data gaps that were identified as part of this work. We could really use some more depth-dependent water quality and water level data to get an idea of what's going on vertically within the system. I didn't touch on it too much, but the water quality variability in chlorides and specific conductance, which really calls out for more data collection in the southern part of the watershed. And we, as I pointed out, that the major sources of pumping, agriculture and domestic, were estimated. So we need better ways of reporting or estimating these unreported sinks.
Yeah, very interesting. The chemical makeup of the water and what's going on under there, Jane.
Yeah, that's quite a load of information, isn't it?
It is, but certainly I think the thing that jumped out at me, wow, isn't water precious? Right,
yeah.
There was a shower 34,000 years ago, and now I'm drinking the water from that. It has just arrived to me. I just find that mind-blowing.
Yeah, well, yeah, there are a couple of issues. Before I start, though, let me just say, let me just explain B to B prime for people who don't actually have the diagram in front of them. This is a transect line. Think of it as kind of a flight line along which there are a number of sampling sites. And so B is a southwestern point. It's south of Sebastopol, about the intersection of Blucher Valley and Bloomfield Roads for people who get around to West County. And the north end, northeast end of it is at the north side of Rincon Valley, kind of where Kiwanis Springs, I think that's, at the top of the hill overlooking Spring Lake. So that's the B to B prime traverse. And it goes from the Wilson Grove across the Cotati Basin, across a little end of the Windsor Basin, and then across Rincon Valley. So in case you're wondering, you know, what's this BB prime? The issue, I think, about, you know, the bottom line on all of this compositional data is that it shows that there's much more saline content to the water at depth, at least in the Cotati Basin and in the Rogers Creek Fault Zone, compared to other waters that were sampled. Let me just describe the Rogers Creek Fault Zone. This is part of the San Andreas system. It connects with the San Andreas Fault to the south, and it's an earthquake fault. And it forms steps in the northeast side of Taylor Mountain. So it's kind of the wall that's along the southeast, so the southwest side of Bennett Valley. And it also goes across the west side of Doyle Park in Santa Rosa, then it heads up toward Healdsburg. So and it's a very broad zone. This is a very big fault, not as big as the San Andreas, but a very important one. So that's a zone where there's just tons of broken rock and lots of circulation within the fault zone, but it pretty much prevents flow across the fault. And that is shown by all the data that's been collected.
Okay.
So what we have is an issue of very slow replenishment of deep groundwater. You don't have water falling in the Mayacamas Mountains,
I always get it wrong.
Yeah, and coming down and replenishing groundwater underneath the southern Santa Rosa Plain because it doesn't get through the Rogers Creek Fault.
Okay.
Whereas I had thought that on the other side of the valley, the Wilson Grove Formation, that great sponge of water, actually continued under the Santa Rosa Plain some distance. It's not true. It's cut off. Before you get to Rohnert Park, it's cut off by another fault, an unnamed fault, which has just been discovered. And so the main part of the basin is just mostly filled up to within about 150 feet of the surface by this Petaluma Formation, which is another very slow transmitter of groundwater. So we've got, you know, shallow groundwater, that's replenished relatively quickly. the deep groundwater is not. And one of the things that's germane to that is that in the recovery of that deep depression in the groundwater surface that we were talking about before, that's shallow and intermediate level groundwater that has come back up and is still coming back up. The deep groundwater in many areas is not recovering. And now we have that explanation as to why that is true, is that the deep groundwater replenishment takes thousands of years.
Wow.
And it's not happening very rapidly. So having drawn that way down, it's not going to recover very rapidly.
It's interesting when you get that geological cycle going and look at it that way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Geology takes a long time.
Exactly. You have to be very patient.
Yes, you have to be very patient or very conserving.
Right. One of the things I know, there was what the various chemicals and things are. Did anything jump out at you in terms of the, I know there were some things like boron and different things that were iron that were fairly high in wells.
Yes, iron and magnesium I contend with all the time in my own well. I'm in the Wilson Grove Formation, so that's going to be a problem for people. The boron is mostly associated with volcanic rocks or deep-seated igneous rocks, so that's something that you'd probably expect to see where the Sonoma volcanics are processing the water, and that's also true in Sonoma Valley. Very high boron in some places.
So do people have to be concerned? It's something that's, you know, different, that's changed, you think?
You know, you can get higher concentrations of these ionic species when you've got the groundwater drawn down and smaller volumes of groundwater in one part of the unit as opposed to the others. I think if you're getting groundwater from 100 feet or less, then you've got shallow groundwater, and you're probably not going to have to be concerned, because except for contaminants in shallow, you know, that are, you might be near contaminants leaking underground tanks and so forth. But with the natural constituents, you're probably going to be okay, because you'll have a lot of dilution.
Are we finding migration down to those depths of, you know, hydrocarbons and other things that we don't like?
There are, you know, where there are briny types of waters, such as that sample that he kept talking about, W102B, then sometimes they are associated with gas or oil deposits. And I know that in the Pengrove area, some wells, when wells started going dry in the 80s and 90s, the late 80s and in the 90s, there were some deep wells drilled that came up with petroleum shows. So there are some, potentially, in some parts of the basin, yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, again, monitoring.
But nothing commercial.
Yeah. Oh.
Nothing to worry about in that way.
Okay.
I don't think we're going to get fracked.
Okay. Thank goodness we can sleep at night.
Yeah, it would be different if we were down farther south in the San Joaquin Valley. They're definitely going to get that.
Oh, dear.
And probably in the Salinas Valley, too.
Well, yeah, until the prices crash and there'll be just hulks left around, yeah.
yeah, low prices are causing a problem for gas producers.
Yeah, supply and demand. Get too much supply, that's what's going to happen. We've seen that boom and bust. So so anyway, we're just at the very end, I think, of the presentation, just about basically what's next they're looking at in terms of the what's going to happen with the information from the workshop. What do you see as happening next? Where do you see how you would like it to go?
Well, I'm participating, representing 31 plus stakeholder environmental groups on the stakeholder panel for the groundwater management plan. And there are other people from those groups that are also attending. So it's not just me holding the fort there for our environmental concerns. what we're going to be able to do now is the technical advisory group is going to be able to go ahead and finish writing and critiquing drafts of the groundwater management plan. We won't have a model calculation to put into it until sometime in 2014, but we can go ahead and write the background information and components of the plan and start talking about implementation plans and that sort of thing. So that's the next stage for the stakeholder panel. When we actually get a groundwater management plan, and I think we're hoping we'll be able to go to the Board of Supervisors with that in the middle of 2014. That's the funding. There's a little bit of a funding limitation there. Actually start a permanent panel to start implementing the plan. Then we'll be able to go to the state. We'll be able to make proposals to the state for funding of additional studies.
I see.
And that's one of the benefits of doing the groundwater management plan under the state law for groundwater management planning, which opens up the possibility of getting state funding. What the budget is like for that now, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I seem to be reading in the paper that the state budget is rebounding somewhat, so I'm optimistic about it. We can do some of the fill-in studies that Dr. Nishikawa was talking about.
Yes, as I say, information is everything. We can't move without it. So wonderful that you've moved it to that place and that we have that chance to do more study and really be able to look at what we've got.
Right. And then the other thing is that the state, even though the state will not regulate groundwater, and it's almost impossible to even mention that in the state house without being, you know, shouted down, the state did vote to establish mandatory monitoring of groundwater levels. Huh. It's called the California Statewide Groundwater Elevation Monitoring Program. And I mentioned that my group, Sebastopol Water Information Group, does monitor private wells around Sebastopol. We were invited to feed our data to this California program. It's called CASGEM. California State Wide Groundwater Elevation Monitoring.
All those catchy names, yeah.
Yes, every basin has to be monitored now by some group or other, but they're doing it as private-public partnerships, as well as designating organizations like the Planning Department of Sonoma County to collect data where other people are not doing it. So that's a really good thing. Far too late for many basins in Southern California, but it's just in the nick of time for us.
Thank goodness. And how can people get hold of you and get some more information on these subjects, Jane?
You can email me.
Okay.
At Jenielson, that's my last name, but it's the way it's properly spelled, at comcast.net. So that's Jenielson at Comcast.net.
Great. And SWIG, where can they get information about that?
We do have a website. Our groundwater management, our groundwater monitoring results are online. If you just Google Owl Foundation, the Owl Foundation, you get the Owl Foundation website, you'll see a place you can click to look at our groundwater monitoring report. And there's another sign that says click here, and you can see a map that shows where the wells are that we monitor and what the data look like, and a plot to show the water levels over the time period that we've been doing our monitoring. And credits the ability to buy the equipment that we needed to the Northern California Environmental Grass Roots Fund of the Rose Foundation. And we're very grateful for that, so I wanted to give them a plug.
Excellent. Any help anywhere we need in these things, in these matters.
That's right.
Well, thank you very much, Jane. My show's running out of time here, so I really appreciate you sticking with us the whole 2 hours and giving us your incredible input to this report on the Santa Rosa Plain.
Well,
groundwater study. Really appreciate that, and it's great to know you're watching and you're involved, and I can rest at night knowing that.
Well, thanks for doing this, Arnold. I hope a lot of people listened.
Well, thank you very much, Jane.
All right.
Appreciate it. Good night.